Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
I can't believe it.
Let's open up that rave line! Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USC is 7-5 again. Oh, no.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Raina Troy Radio, episode 532, coming to you on Monday, January 29th. We're going to look at the current landscape of USC football, talk about when the Trojans can compete. We're talking about the Jen Cohen interview over at the Parastyle Podcast and discuss that and so much more. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Reign of Troy. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Reign of Troy. Be sure to subscribe to us wherever you find your podcasts. We are there. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, wherever you find a pod, we're there. Email address, reignoftroy@fanside.com, and our phone number, 818-643-7227, Second Wits Bruin Show. I'm your host, Michael Castillo, joined along with my co-host here in the Reign of Troy studio in Los Angeles, Alicia D'Aretola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. We are here live on the YouTube, live. Welcome to everybody in the chats. Rama Murdy says hello and fight on. We got Tim, we got Kenny, we got Matthew, we got people join in the chat right away. Super pumped to have you guys here, as always, on YouTube. Alicia, a lot to get to in this episode. We're already at the end of January, which is nuts. We could do that, you know, stereotypical, like,
1 month down.
Can you believe?
8 months to go.
Can you believe how quick this year has gone? We could do that it's, sort of thing.
It's already going.
Yeah. Things are moving along. A lot of things moving along. Including, have you heard about the new deal from DraftKings? Is moving along. Perfect time for you guys to jump on board. They're offering a fantastic sign up bonus for new users. You can place a $5 bet on anything to instantly claim $200 in bonus bets. Perfect for that that big game that's coming up soon in a couple of weeks. We'll also be able to be rewarded with separate no-sweat single-game parlays every single day when you opt in. The best part is you'll receive both the rewards even if your first bet loses. So when you join DraftKings, make sure to sign up with our promo code Reign of Troy. Using that code, Reign of Troy, all one word, not only gets you the great bonuses, but directly supports the podcast. So if you've been considering signing up for DraftKings, make sure to use the code Reign of Troy to maximize those first bets. Parlays, the offer, of course, only available to new customers who are 21 plus and physically present in legal gambling states. Please remember to always gamble responsibly, and check the episode description for the full terms of the offer to see if you qualify. Alicia, yeah, I mentioned the big game coming up soon. We finally got two teams for that one in the pro league. Niners and Chiefs.
The not rigged, because because the Ravens and 49ers aren't meeting up in a purple and red Super Bowl.
Yeah, the script writers sort of screwed up a little bit.
It's very red. I saw a tweet that was so it's red versus red Taylor's version. And I thought was funny. So
there is nothing I want less than the Chiefs to just go away. I'm done with the Chiefs.
See, and I'm completely on the opposite spectrum.
No, get them out of here.
I was a massive Patriots hater for the entire Patriots dynasty. I was miserable every year because I hated watching the Patriots win. And I'm kind of happy because this Chiefs dynasty is rolling. They're winning everything. I expect them to win the Super Bowl because I don't bet against Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes.
Ten times more nauseating.
I like them. I like Patrick Mahomes. God. I like Andy Reid. I like Travis Kelce.
Why is Patrick Mahomes in every single commercial?
Because he's Patrick Mahomes, and
he's got no charisma.
He doesn't, but. Tom Brady didn't have any charisma, but at least none of them have charisma unless they're Peyton Manning.
At least Tom Brady, you know, was like model hot at one point. Like, what does Mahomes have going for him in these commercials other than he's Mahomes and wins a lot of football games?
He has the graveliest voice that you've ever heard. That's what he has going for him.
I can't do it. And I can't do it with the thing that you mentioned too. Like, God,
I wouldn't classify myself as a Swiftie. I appreciate Taylor Swift's music, but I mostly am now. I feel like it's like when you see one side that's so fervently in one direction, it makes you more of an extremist on the other direction. That's how I feel about the Taylor Swift stuff. Like, the more I see people hate the Taylor Swift stuff, the more I love the Taylor Swift stuff. Like, I was straight up smiling watching all of the post game with her and Travis, and they just look really happy, and God. I love that. I love that
gag,
for them.
Gag. It's fake. It's phony. It's not real. And if he proposes after the Super Bowl, then you really know it's bullshit. It's not real.
Kenny in the chat, to bring this back to USC, says Darnold and Hufanga will get a shot at Super Bowl rings. So will Drake Jackson, who I feel like there's been a lot of Drake Jackson erasure on this podcast when discussing the 49ers. Because Drake Jackson and Talanoa Hufanga are both injured, so they won't be able to play.
I like how Kenny phrased it. Darnold and Hufanga with a shot at Super Bowl rings. Not necessarily saying that they could win them, but they could get rings. Ring. Yes, Hufanga hurts. Darnold the backup, even though it would be a great story if Darnold somehow got in there and, you know, beat Mahomes and whatever. Yeah. Obviously, you don't wish injury upon anybody or anything like that. But, it's interesting situation because the one Trojan who would have had the most impact in the game lost on Sunday in Amon Ross. So, yeah. Yeah. Anyways, Janev says we're both so interesting. I hope this is true. All right. Before we get into anything else, want to get to a YouTube comment that we got from last week's episode. This is from 4Work2601. Let's keep it real. USC is at least 4 to 5 years away from fielding a decently competitive team. 4 to 5 years away from competing, from fielding a decently competitive team. It is how it was worded. I saw this comment and I immediately created a rundown and put this into this because I've got so many things. Like, first of all, what does decently competitive team even mean? Because, like, we're literally 2 months away from SC being tied in the fourth quarter with the team that lost the national championship game. Mind you, SC had the 119th ranked total defense in America, and still we're literally tied in the fourth quarter facing the team that was the runner-up in the national championship game, Washington, 2 months ago. And you're saying that they're 4 to 5 years away from being decently competitive? No, SC is competitive right now. What do you mean? Do you mean that they're, like, you know, competitive, not, removed from a national, like, being in the playoff? Okay, so I said they were 2 months away from competing with Washington. Well, they're a year and two months from being a 2-point conversion away from being in the playoff. Like, if they beat Utah, if they stop that 2-point conversion against Utah last season, SC goes 12-0 in the regular season. They can afford the buffer loss in the Pac-12 championship game, and they go to the playoff. Like, that was, you know, a year and 2 months ago. If they can be that close to being decently competitive, then they don't have to wait 4 to 5 years on the front end now to be decently competitive again. I think SC will be competitive this year. Would I consider them a national title contender? Absolutely not. No. But like, what is the, what do you mean decently competitive? Like, yeah, I think SC is going to be decently competitive. I don't think that they're, I don't think there's a single game on the schedule next year where you look at it and say SC has literally no chance to win that game. No, they're gonna have a puncher's chance in literally every game, even the tough ones. Like, I hate the term decently competitive because I think everybody is decently competitive in some sense, and maybe this is just semantics, but. Yeah, yes, SC needs to address a lot of things. You need to make sure that the defensive rebuild sort of takes and holds and is successful and all those things before you start talking about SC as a national championship contender. But decently competitive? They're decently competitive today.
There's a warped sense of what competitive means at USC. I remember having a lot of conversations in the early period of the last decade about USC sort of being in sort of 9-win purgatory, and how for most teams that's one of their best years ever,
right?
And that incredibly USC in the post Pete Carroll era hadn't slipped below a winning record at any point until they got to was it 2018. And how rare that was, and how unique that is, and how the vast majority of college football fans don't experience college football that way.
Mm-hmm.
I think that 100% agree with you on this. The idea that USC, it'll take that long for USC to be competitive. I'm not even going to say decently competitive. I'm going to say just competitive at all in terms of competing for a national title. That timeline is off. I agree that it will be difficult for USC to win a national title in 2024, but USC could be in the playoff in 2024 with a 12-team expanded playoff. With a 12-team playoff, they would have been in the playoff with a decent chance of doing some real damage, if not for Caleb Williams pulling his hamstring in the Pac-12 title game. USC is never that far away, because USC is a program that, when you find the right person, can flip the switch very quickly. Just think about what Pete Carroll did.
Mm-hmm.
Pete Carroll flipped the switch in 2 years, and that was without the transfer portal being a concept. That was with taking Paul Hackett's players,
right,
and turning them into Orange Bowl winners in after one season of working out the kinks. Like, that's how quickly USC can always make it happen. If there is skepticism about Lincoln Riley from this commentator, then I could understand that being an issue for somebody. If you really think that Lincoln Riley is all smoke and mirrors and doesn't actually have what it takes to win a national title, which is a question that he still has to answer, then you could say that USC is 4 years from a national title, 5 years from being competitive, because that's how long it's going to take for USC to end mm-hmm. up getting in a position where they can buy Lincoln Riley out. Right. If we're going to sort of just get from a technical point of view, then I suppose, sure. But my skepticism about Lincoln Riley is sort of more of a healthy skepticism, where he still has to prove that he can get there, but I don't doubt that he can get there. I think that when you look at what his offense will always be capable of doing, which just has been a consistent factor. Like you pointed out, like, this season was miserable, and USC somehow, most teams who had a defense as terrible as USC's defense would have lost a whole lot more games than USC did. But USC's offense is always competitive, will always be competitive under Lincoln Riley. And you look at the defensive changes that have been made, I think you have to feel a great deal of optimism about the defensive personnel that's been brought in. We've joked about how USC has gone out and got, with the exception of the defensive coordinator himself,
yeah,
every single one of USC's position coaches on defense are overqualified for the job that they're doing. And are all exceptional hires, I think, just from an objective point of view. Mm-hmm. So you have to believe that they're going to come in and do something interesting, at least with the defense. Does an improved defense immediately make USC a national title contender? No, because you look at the size and physicality of teams that win national titles. When you look at Georgia, what the product that Georgia is always going to put on the field. When you look at the way that Ohio State is recruiting. When you think about the potential for, you know, if Sherrone Moore can keep things together at Michigan and keep the consistent identity of that program going forward, then they're going to be in there. You think about the Texas, what Steve Sarkisian has built in Texas and all of these other programs, they're always going to be super competitive. USC is always going to be in a position where they have to rise up a level in the trenches from where they are right now. But why can't USC do that, I guess, would be my question. USC has gone out and hired an NFL defensive line coach who has spent the last handful of years coaching Aaron Donald and just put together a defensive line that was one of the best in the NFL, coached a defensive rookie of the year candidate who led all rookies in sacks and everything. Like, Eric Henderson is a home run hire in the trenches who, why can't he create the change in the trenches that USC needs defensively in order to actually compete with a team like Georgia or Alabama or whoever it is? There's no reason USC can't be in that mix with the teams that are in that mix right now. You have to be honest that USC isn't there right now, to completely 100% fair, but USC is not 5 years away from being in that space. I think they're probably a couple years from being in that space. And even then, even when you get into that space, you can still end up in Ohio State's situation, where Ohio State has recruited the trenches extremely well, has recruited across the board extremely well, and still hasn't been able to get over the hump. Yeah. And Texas is going to face questions about how long until they can get over the hump. And, you know, basically everybody but Georgia is especially Michigan too, because Michigan is losing literally everybody, including their strength and conditioning coach, including their defensive coordinator, including all of the, everybody's in a position where they're 1 year away from having a dip and 1 year away from having a rise. I think that the new reality in college football is that it's probably a little bit more like the NBA than it's ever been, in the sense of, you can just hit on the right group of players in the right moment, and
a lot of boom and bust without the sort of the tanking element. But you can have guys come in and change things really quickly. Dave in the chat says, you question if Moore at Michigan can keep it rolling, but are confident in Lincoln Riley making the playoffs. Wow, that makes no sense. How many have transferred out since Harbaugh left? I don't think either one of us are confident in Lincoln Riley making the playoffs as it stands right now because of the defense.
No, I think USC can make the playoffs because it's an expanded 12 team.
Can
is not will. Absolutely. No. And also Michigan hasn't had people transfer out because, number one, they hired the interim coach, but also, who's going to transfer from Michigan? They're losing their starting lineup on both sides of the ball. Like, I'm sorry, they don't have a lot of players who are in a position to transfer. Most of their starters are leaving for the NFL. Most of the people who were going to leave that program have already left that program before any of this happened. They have a bajillion questions to answer on both sides of the ball about how they're going to be able to reload an incredibly veteran units that won them a national title. Like, I'm not going to doubt Michigan, because I think that one of the things that I have been reflecting on very recently, because of I'm wearing my Liverpool jersey today, for those who aren't watching on YouTube, is Jurgen Klopp is leaving Liverpool at the end of the year, at the end of the season. And he's been at Liverpool for 9 years. And he's won Champions League, he's won Premier League, he's won everything. And his big thing that he preaches is about like the culture and about being able to identify players who are willing to give themselves away to the team, in the sense of buying in, and the importance of togetherness and everybody pulling together and all of that. And I think that what Jim Harbaugh did at Michigan over the last 2 years that was very impressive was he really galvanized that program and built a culture at that program of togetherness and of us against the world mentality and all of that kind of stuff. You see Kirby Smart is doing that and has done that at Georgia. That's why he talks about how people doubt them, because that's how you bring the team sort of together. And I think that keeping Sharon Moore will allow them to potentially keep that continuity of culture, but also
right.
Sharon Moore has a huge task ahead of him with, he has to find a new DC who doesn't break that chain of culture. He needs to go find a new strength and conditioning coach who doesn't break that chain of culture.
Oh yeah, the strength and conditioning coach. You know, those are the real difference makers, remember?
Well, I mean, to be fair though, strength and conditioning coaches do play a big role in culture. You and I both agree that the role of strength and conditioning coaches in terms of like injury prevention and size and all that kind of stuff it's more about like it's the culture within the team of how hard you work and all that kind of stuff. It does matter. And the strength and conditioning coach at Michigan has been credited with being a big part of the culture building at that program. He's right. Now gone. Where do you go from there? I think every coach out there is just trying to find a way to build a winning culture. And
mm-hmm.
very few of them, by the way, manage to do that on a sustained basis.
Right.
Kirby Smart is the only established coach in college football right now with a truly winning culture to his name. I suppose Dabo Swinney, I'm doing him dirty, but like even Dabo is a really good example of how you can have a program that had really strong winning culture, and then at a certain point you can lose that. A step.
I would say that Clemson still has the culture, but they don't have the other stuff.
Yeah, they don't. Right? Well, yeah, and there's a lot of reasons of why they might be just sort of lacking on.
Yeah. To go back to the stuff that Dave was talking about in the chat, I think there's a difference between like winning a national championship and being competitive. The question that we were going off of from, or the comment that we were talking about at the beginning that we got on YouTube last week, was about SC being 4 to 5 years away from fielding a decently competitive team. That does not, it's not saying 4 or 5 years away from winning a national championship. Yeah. 4 to 5 years from winning a national championship, I think, is a sound, reasonable opinion. Like, yeah, like I don't think that that's, I think that that's
the vast majority of teams are 4 to 5 ways
at least, or longer. Yeah, right. But like but decently competitive,
which I would say is
the word,
being in the playoff.
I don't even think it's being in the playoff that is decently competitive. I think it is.
Imagine that this person is talking about decently competitive in the sense that, like, can you win a playoff game?
Well, sure, but, like, that's not what those words decently competitive mean.
Right. I'm just sort of reading between the lines.
Maybe I'm just, you know, focusing on semantics way too much here. I get it. But, like, I don't think SC is going to make the playoff this upcoming year. I would not say that they're going to win 10 games. But if you look at historically, well, where is that 12 playoff team cutoff? Well, like where is it? It's 9-3, 10-2. If you're 9-3, you have a prayer to get in. But if you're 10-2, you're most likely going to get in. And I don't think it's insane to say that SC could, on the very upper side of their ceiling, be 10-2 this upcoming season. Am I going to predict that? No. Like, I'm not predicting SC is going 10-2, but like, I think that that might be where their ceiling is. So like, yeah, like I think that these are possibilities. These are if everything goes right. But right now, SC is a 7-win team. 8-5, I guess. But they're a 7-win team in the regular season. They've got to prove that they've taken a step forward. Given the improvements on defense, I think it's more than fair to say that SC is probably at least one game better.
Oh, I would wager with an improved defense, which I am anticipating.
Yeah, I think that
SC is at least one game. I would put the over under there at 1.5, and sure, take the over.
But I think that if you just very conservatively, I think SC is probably one game better. You factor in they're losing Caleb Williams, the factor in the improvement of the defense. SC more like realistically right now is probably like one game better, 8-4. As it stands right now, if you put a gun in my head, I'd be like 8-4. I think is a reasonable expectation for where SC is going into next season.
And can I ask what the four losses are? Let's just do this exercise.
Oh God, are we like doing it? This? Michigan.
Yeah, at the Big House for sure.
I mean, I guess LSU just for sheer chalk, but I. We've talked about it before. Like the problem is like the I think the landscape is so difficult to pick who those four losses are next year.
Yeah.
Because so many teams are rebuilding. Like you talked about, it's the whole NBA thing. Like teams that you think that were good in this year, like three teams in the playoff, three of the four teams in the playoff don't have their coach anymore.
Yeah.
Like that's how crazy the landscape is. Is changing. Texas is the only one, and Texas was the one who you would probably with Sark would probably be the fourth ranked coach in the playoff, right? If you were ranking the four head coaches in the playoff, Sark's the fourth more than likely, and they're the only ones that retain their head coach. Like, and that's just the playoff, but like everything in college football is changing so much next year that I think it's so difficult. I say next year, this year, I guess.
Yeah,
it's so next difficult season. To predict what it's going to be. So I guess if you're going strictly chalk of what SC's losses are, four games, I guess Michigan, LSU, Penn State, and Notre Dame, I guess?
Yeah, it's LSU, Michigan, Penn State, and Notre Dame are what I would circle as the most likely losses on USC's schedule.
Right.
But recognizing probably that we literally have no idea what Washington's going to be.
Right.
Like, Washington was a game that I was very nervous about, and now it's a good thing that game is in November, because we'll know a whole lot more about Washington.
Right.
By the time that game shows up, then we will be able to even guess into this year.
Realistically, given how college football works, SC probably loses to Minnesota but beats Penn State, and then beats Notre Dame but loses at Maryland. You know what I mean? Like realistically, like that's how football works, right? So I don't know. Either way, I think it's less about the four games. We talked about this before. The record itself. It matters, but like I'm thinking that when you're talking about in your head of what you think of as an 8-4 team, I think right now, I think just assume SC is an 8-4 team until, like, I think SC has done enough in the offseason with the changes in the coaching staff to promote them from a 7-5 to an 8-4 team. And until you see more, i.e., until you see what they look like on September 1st against LSU, don't change that to go up or down until then. Just assume 8-4, and that's a reasonable expectation going into the season. Kenny says he thinks 9-3 is realistic.
I'm with Kenny on the 9. I'm on the 9-3. I think 9-3 is your starting point if you're USC.
Personally. Yeah.
But that's me. And that's... Yeah, I just if it's a starting point of 9-3, then that can go either way to me. 8-4, 10-2.
Sure.
And this year, there wasn't a 2-loss team that would have gotten left out of a 12-team field.
Right. Yeah.
So that's all we're saying is is I think it's very easy to be doom and gloom. But I think that there's also a sense of things can change for the better quickly, as well as they changed for the worse quickly this year. And that's always a possibility when it comes to USC.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to give a shout out to Super Chat we got from Gary and Dana Point.
Hey.
Thank you. Cheers. Cheers with some good old water. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how the sort of season goes together with everything, because we've talked about before that the schedule next year is just so weird. Like,
it's impossible because
it's impossible to understand where everyone's going to be, because Washington was just in the national championship game. SC lost against Washington 52-42 in a game, in a shootout that SC had more than a puncher's chance of during that game, right? But that is not remotely the same team anymore.
Washington and Michigan, we can copy paste the commentary on both of those teams. Yeah. Neither have the head coach that got them to where they were last year. Both are losing the vast majority, all, if not all, of their starters from their playoff, and, from their Washington playoff State teams.
Washington is changing their entire coaching staff.
Washington's losing their entire coaching staff, and they're too deep. There is a picture floating around of the Washington too deep that went to the national championship game with the names crossed out of ones who won't be there.
Mm-hmm.
And it is all like,
yeah, one of their star corners,
like 90% of them are gone.
Yeah, the star corner Jabbar Muhammad, turning heel and going to Oregon. Like, a lot.
LSU lost their Heisman winning quarterback and had, mm-hmm, just as many defensive questions as USC did. They have a lot of the same questions that USC does. The best, Greg pointed out, would you agree that Riley Leonard is the best quarterback USC will face, or Drew Aller? Just think about that. Think about in this disastrous season for USC that's just passed, the quarterbacks that USC faced. If you ranked the quarterbacks that USC will face in the 2024 season collectively with the quarterbacks that USC faced in the 2023 season, I think Riley Leonard isn't necessarily in competition for the top 5. Like,
no, like I
Penix, Nix, Hartman, Fafita, who am I?
There's the list was insane of all the guys that SC played this past year.
Shooter Sanders.
Sanders, my mind is blanking all of a sudden.
The rest are not necessarily San Jose State, Nevada, Stanford, Arizona State, no. Utah,
Riley Leonard is probably like 6th or 7th on that list.
No, but that's my point. Is like USC faced a murderer's row of quarterbacks this year.
The toughest that probably SC will ever face ever.
And next year, the best quarterback that USC will face is arguably Riley Leonard, who I really like, by the way.
Yeah.
But is also,
at the same time, would you have had Noah Fifita on that list a year ago?
That's true. No. Yeah, I certainly would not have. So.
And he was there. So, like, guys are going to come into the fold. There's freshmen who haven't gotten an opportunity yet who are going to end up being good quarterbacks. Plus,
that's how unpredictable all of this
is. Right, yeah.
Because, like, Drew Aller is a quarterback who's just, to me, and I'm the famous last words, but, like, the epitome of just, like, meh, he's whatever.
Yeah.
And he's the second best quarterback on USC's schedule right now, realistically. Right.
Yeah.
Cam
in the chat says SC will really have to change their mentality and physicality because SC will be more talented in some ways in the periphery, but the Big Ten is way more physical in the trenches than the Pac-12.
We say all this recognizing that, like, as many questions as we are pointing out for them, we're pointing those questions out because those are the things that we're not thinking about.
Right.
We all know the massive questions that USC has. Like,
for sure. I think that when it comes to the physicality of the defense and all that stuff, and going back to the stuff that Dave P had in the chat earlier about Michigan's defense and all that. Yes, Michigan's defense would have, absolutely shut down SC because of winning the battle at the line. You look back at the Cotton Bowl in 2017 and how SC got shut down with the Ohio State line that had, you know, a Bosa on it, right? Like, this is, yes, I think that when you talk about the physicality, I think it is difficult, but that's, I think it's Michigan, it's Ohio State, it's Penn State, in some ways Wisconsin, and in some ways Iowa. And after that, I don't think that it all still applies. You also, like, we're talking about an SC schedule that has already had to play Notre Dame every year, an SC schedule that has had to play Utah every year. You're like, I get that the narrative and the idea is that the Big Ten is black and blue, physical, hard nosed, 3 yards in a cloud of dust, one in the trenches football, and there's a reason for that narrative to exist, but I don't think it's like, I don't think it's that infallible, especially when SC already, like, Oregon for the longest time, like, we're talking, like, what, it's been 6-7 years now, Oregon and has been just about the most physical team in the country. Mm-hmm. They're like dominating games on the offensive line. Just like Utah is, like, SC has played teams like that before. Washington this year certainly wasn't as stout in the trenches as they have been before, but they've had those teams too. Like, I don't think that, like, SC is going to play this kind of football that they've never played before, and it's just going to be, like, shocking, and they're going to go into a game against Rutgers where, like, they're just pushed off the ball in a way that was different than, say, what Cal or ASU could do to SC. Like, if SC is losing games in the line of scrimmage, I think that's because SC is not good enough on the lines. I think it's less about because of the vaunted style of the Big Ten.
This is, I could not agree more. And I wanted to point out a comment that Michael in the chat said, the teams that can hold together and develop an offensive line for consecutive years will have the advantage in the current climate. That is 100% the thing. USC right now is where they're at in large part because they have not recruited and developed the trenches well enough.
Right.
But USC not recruiting and developing the trenches well enough is a right now problem. It's not a historical problem.
Yeah.
Otherwise, USC's record against the Big Ten in the Rose Bowl would not be as good as it is. So it's not like there's a barrier to USC being a team that can go toe to toe with the physicality of the Big Ten landscape. It's that if USC can't do that, it's because USC did something wrong, not because USC mm-hmm. like it's about your capability and your and how well you execute the plan to get there, right?
Yeah.
There is nothing stopping USC structurally from getting there.
Right. Yeah. Cam in the chat says it's different, Michael, when you play 2-3 teams on the schedule versus 8-9 teams on the schedule. Even Rutgers and Maryland are physical. You just don't have the Pac-12's quarterback in wideouts. Yeah.
Well, but that's my point, though, is like that's the great equalizer. Okay. So USC might get beat up a little bit by playing, you know, Wisconsin and Minnesota and Penn State and Maryland and Rutgers all in a row, but those teams don't have the quarterbacks and wide receivers.
It's a different part of the whole blanket theory thing, right?
Yes.
Like you got to leave your head or your toes exposed. What are you exposing?
You
yeah, it's one of those kind of things where. Yeah, I get that. Yeah, yes. In terms of physicality, the Rutgers, especially under Schiano, is probably more physical than, say, the air raid Cal teams of 2014. Yeah, like absolutely. But like, I don't know that makes it more difficult. Honestly, like, yes, SC has issues on the offensive line, but like they have issues on the offensive line against everybody. So like, I don't know I hear you about the depth of the physicality stuff, but like to go to what Kenny was saying in the chat too, like look at what Michigan, Penn State, and Ohio State do to the rest of the Big Ten. Yeah, it's the Big Ten is not as competitive as the Pac-12 has been. The Big Ten does not eat itself like the Pac-12 has. And I know that a lot of that has been like looked at as the like the detriment of the Pac-12, that, oh, the Pac-12 couldn't produce playoff teams because they would just beat each other up, and that was a flaw of the Pac-12. I don't necessarily think that it always was, though. This past year, like, literally everybody in the Pac-12 could have beaten somebody. Like, you know, ASU had Washington on the ropes at one point, right? Like, this was the best Pac-12 season that we've ever seen. Because there's just so many great teams there. And
well, I mean, Washington beat Texas.
I guess one thing is, like, I understand the worry about going to the Big Ten. I just don't think it's... I just think it's a little overblown.
Like, I agree
SC
with
what... SC has played tough teams all the time.
Yeah, I agree with what Daniel says in the chat. These physical teams also don't play offenses that operate at the pace that Lincoln can as well. You saw Michigan struggle to score against Washington until the very end of the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a style. It's a style matchup. And the style matchups don't always favor just the one side of the different style. Sometimes it's about which team does what they do better. You know, if USC is going to have to win games by just being more finesse, then they have to do finesse at perfection, and they'll be able to have that be the thing that gets them over the hump, at least for right now. I think we all agree that USC needs to get more physical in the trenches, though. It's not just about competing with the physicality of teams in the Big Ten, but if USC wants to win national titles, they need to do both. They need to be the best team physically and also do the finesse offense that rolls through you.
When Ohio State is on their game, they are great at doing both.
Yes. Yeah.
When Oregon is on their game, they're great at doing both.
It's not like Ohio State hasn't been running a spread offense this entire damn time.
Yes. Yeah. I think in a lot of ways, stylistically, Ohio State, Oregon, Alabama are the pinnacle.
Yes.
In the sense of, they can run with you, but they can also punch you in the face and control the line of scrimmage. They can do both of those things at elite levels. And I think that those three teams have the highest ceilings of anybody because of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like Georgia, they're so good on defense and they're so good in the trenches that it doesn't matter. They don't need this amazing, incredible offense. The same thing with Michigan this past year, right? Like, their offense was pretty good, but, like, they can be a world beater just being pretty good because their defense is that great.
Right,
Where I think the best of both worlds is Oregon, Ohio State, and Alabama.
The best of both worlds what Nick Saban ended up building in Alabama. They had the biggest, baddest defense in the land, and also an offense run by Lane Kiffin and Steve Sarkisian that would absolutely put you on fire.
Sure.
So, that's the goal. The goal is to do both.
Right. And I recognize that, like, you know, saying this, the best of both worlds, blah, 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 and yet those are the teams that, surely have flamed out in the playoffs.
What is a classic Pete Carroll team? The best Pete Carroll team, 2004, is a defense that is full of All-Americans that'll punch you in the mouth, and an offense with Heisman Trophy winners in it.
Mm-hmm.
Run by Norm Chow. Like, that's right. USC has done Porcinello's dose on this.
USC is actually
one of the few teams that is capable of consistently bringing in what you need.
Whereas that, say, the 2007 team, which should have won a national championship if it wasn't for the faltering in the middle of the season because Booty's injury, and then they go and they lose to a very good Oregon team valiantly with a backup quarterback. But that team was, I think, at the end of the year, more than capable of beating anyone on its schedule, and was very much in line with what Georgia is now, where it's like there was a world beater defense in 2007 that didn't have to be elite on offense, even though they had a lot of great playmakers on offense. So, yeah. All right, let's talk about, you mentioned All-Americans. ESPN has a too early All-American team out for 2024. There is one Trojan on there, first team All-Returner, Zachariah Branch. Alicia, do you agree? Is he the most likely Trojan to be an All-American in 2024?
I think him being on a too early All-American team as a returner is a no-brainer. Absolutely a no-brainer.
He did it as a freshman.
He's coming back. I think that's an easier projection than any of the ones that you and I are going to try to do right now.
Yeah, just scrolling through here really quick. Carson Beck being picked as the quarterback seems insane.
I get it, though, because just like we talked about, like, it's so hard to nail down what USC's schedule is going to actually look like.
Yeah, but
the quarterback movement, it's like, honestly, it's basically, it's who
how do you not pick Dylan Gabriel there?
Because he's going to play at Oregon and he's not Georgia. I mean, they've got Dylan Gabriel of second team.
Like, he plugs in and he plugs in for everything that Nick's was going to do.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyways, so talk to me about your All-Americans of the future.
Okay, so I wanted to do an exercise where we decide which USC player is the most likely to be the next All-American at USC. And I had to think about this.
Next new All-American. So we're not talking about Zachariah Branch.
We are not talking about Zachariah Branch.
Okay.
Zachariah Branch is already the first team returner. I'm sort of thinking more offense, defense. Who will be the most likely to take that step to be an All-American? And my picks are kind of optimistic in the sense that, like, if either of these came true, then that would be a very, very good signal for what comes forward for USC. So my thought was on defense, I think there's a shout for one of the transfers, but I think Bear Alexander has, at this point, potentially name recognition enough, and could, when you think about what Eric Henderson has done with defensive linemen in the NFL, I think Bear Alexander is a guy to look out for, is somebody who has the talent ceiling that that would need,
mm-hmm.
the name recognition, and the potential to go out there and be that dude.
Yeah, I think that's probably a strong call. I just have I find it so difficult because it's defensive line is so much of an eye test win. And I think that when it comes to USC All-Americans, especially on a team that's maybe not a national championship contender, like a team that's not top five going into the season, you sort of need statistics to sort of back you up, right? Like, you sort of need, like, yeah, Drake London's going to be this guy because he leads in this category, and this category. And I think for defensive tackle, it's so difficult, and it usually ends up with, it's the great defensive tackle on the great defense.
Yeah.
Who probably that team is the great defense because of their defensive tackle, right? And so certainly I think that it could be Bear Alexander. I just think the most likely scenario is, I know we're not talking about Zachariah Branch, but, like, I think it could be Zachariah Branch at receiver or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. I think that would be certainly possible if he has a breakout season as a receiver. I could see him getting All-American easier than the fact, like, he could be an All-American on a season where USC doesn't have a good season.
Yeah.
Where Bear Alexander won't be an All-American unless USC is having a very good season.
Right. But
defensively.
The other thing is, like, if Bear Alexander is so clearly an All-American by the eye test and his, you know, PFF grades and whatever other thing you want to use, shows how good he is. If that's the case, that might be the best option, the best indicator of how well the SC season.
That's sort of, right? My,
like,
point.
I think you would want Bear Alexander to be the All-American more than anybody else.
If you told me that Bear Alexander was a 2024 All-American and then asked me what USC's record is, I would say 11-1.
It's at least 10-2, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, if Zachariah Branch is the All-American,
receiver, still could be 8-4.
It could be 5-7.
Yeah,
it could be anything, right? Like,
well, I don't know if 5-7 in that case, but yeah, but no, I'm totally with you.
No, yeah. If he catches 120 balls or whatever,
yeah,
like,
it's the wide receiver sort of all American thing.
It could be anything.
We've seen great wide receivers at USC get national recognition when the team itself wasn't that good,
right?
So I'm going to go out with another option on offense that I think would also be an extremely positive indicator of how things have gone at USC, but that I think is quite realistic because of one thing, because of something you just mentioned, because PFF All-Americans exist. And Jonah Monheim returning on the offensive line with, I think, a more stable offensive line around him, I think Jonah Monheim could have his Andrew Voorhees year. I think he could have his Austin Jackson year. I think he could have his Elijah Vera Tucker year, where he is just your old reliable veteran on that offensive line, and he gets the recognition from maybe not the major selectors, but from a service like PFF that is doing grades.
Yeah,
that Jonah Monheim would be a pick for me as a very possible candidate for that.
Yeah. I think it would be interesting. I don't know that it's as sure of an indicator that SC is playoff caliber.
Good, yeah.
But I think it would be, you said Jonah Monheim was an All-America. I'm like, okay, they're at least 9-3, probably.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, if Jonah Monheim is an All-American, then that would generally indicate to me that USC's offense has not taken a drastic step back.
Sure.
I think the offense
just stays the same.
Yeah.
The offense can stay the same. Like,
yeah.
I know that obviously you want the receivers to take a big step forward. I think you want the offensive line to take a big step forward, all those things. But if the offense the offensive growth is not the focal, that's not what's holding SC back.
It's the defense, yeah.
From winning a lot of games this past year.
The offense just needs to take not a drastic step back with Caleb Williams not running the show.
Right.
Which, by the way, I think the Holiday Bowl was a really good example. Not the end-all, be-all example, to be fair, because a bowl game is a bowl game, and it's hard to say. But a really good example of how the offense doesn't have to take a big step back. The offense can just be...
Well, remember when we, what was it, 4 years ago, going on 5 years ago, when SC got Graham Harrell at offensive coordinator, and there was the big discussion about who would be the quarterback? Would it be JT Daniels? Would it be Matt Fink? Would it be that freshman Keaton Slovis?
Oh, right.
And I went to bat so loudly, the quarterback doesn't matter. If this is truly an air raid system, then the quarterback doesn't matter, because in literally every other air raid system, they replace quarterbacks willy-nilly, and it does not matter that Washington State would, under Leach, every single one, just boom, boom, boom.
Yeah. They all kept that offense ticking.
Every single, you get some dude from some podunk JC and like, backwoods Idaho, and you're like, well, who's this dude? And then all of a sudden he's thrown for 4,500 yards, right? Like,
it doesn't matter.
SC does not run the air raid. However, there's air raid concepts and all those things, and I think the offense, if it is on schedule, is designed to get guys open. We can argue until we're blue in the face about whether or not SC's offense succeeds enough in doing that, but I think the Holiday Bowl showed that the system itself can succeed with just about anybody at quarterback. And that's not a knock on Miller Moss. That's more of a signal of like, there's a reason that every quarterback that Lincoln Riley has had has succeeded. And if you want to, I know I say this all the time, but if you want to say, but Spencer Rattler won his last 13 games as a starting quarterback until he got benched. So, like, he won his last 13 games.
Until he got benched for the future number one overall pick. And then
he
even lost the game that
he got benched because Caleb Williams won it. Yeah. And so, like, Yes. Like, I think the you know, I've said it before that, like, I don't think that you should expect someone of the caliber of Caleb Williams. I don't think you should expect Max Williams. What am I saying? Miller Moss. Wrong M. That's MW. MM.
Yeah.
Miller Moss. you shouldn't expect him to be Caleb Williams. You shouldn't expect Maiava to be Caleb Williams. But I don't think it's unreasonable to expect, say, the production of Cody Kessler's great season or Sam Darnold's 2016. Like, though, the production that those two seasons had were great for USC because it was so revolutionary for what we had seen with quarterbacks. But that's just standard. Like, that's typical. Like, that is baseline now in college football. So I think SC absolutely can produce that no matter who the quarterback is, and it's going to help. All right, let's go to the news. We got a fair bit of news, so let's get to that. Alicia, you know the only good thing about football season being over?
There's literally nothing good about the football season being over. It's just an endless wait until the fall.
See, that's where you're wrong. It's tournament season. The best way to take your mind off the endless wait.
That is true. I may not want to watch the men play, but the USC women are pretty awesome.
Exactly, but it's not just SC. There's high-stake basketball moments all over the country. But you know what? They get even better with Prize Picks.
So you're saying the only thing better than watching Juju Watkins is taking the more on Juju Watkins.
Bingo. You can now turn your hoops knowledge and love of Juju Watkins into serious cash. Because you can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. Turn $10 into $1,000 with college basketball, NBA, and NHL entries. Best of all, Prize Picks lets you get on the action on more than 30 states across the country, including Texas, Georgia, and California.
That sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah, download the app today and use the code RAINOFTROY for a first deposit match up to $100.
That's the Prize Picks app with the code RAINOFTROY for the first deposit match up to $100.
Pick more.
Pick less.
It's that easy.
Hey, everyone. It's Mike Silva from Talkin' Mets. I am always about helping my listeners, and today I want to help you eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. My wife and I tried it, and we love it. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. I was tired after a long day the other night, and I was at the table eating a delicious meal just minutes after walking in the door. Are you looking for a gourmet meal? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccoli, and asparagus. You can also choose from a weekly menu of 35 options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Don't forget your add-ons. There are 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? The Mets set the playoffs as their goal this year. Get started today and fuel up your springtime goals with Factor. Head to factormeals.com/Mets50 and use code Mets50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code Mets50 at factormeals.com/Mets50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. I tried Factor and loved it. Why don't you?
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right. Maybe not news, but
there's very little news.
Let's talk about Jen Cohen going on the Peristyle podcast. So go listen to that if you haven't. I put a link in the description over on YouTube. If you're watching us on YouTube, you can switch over after this. Wait until we're done and then click the link and go watch our friends over the Peristyle podcast. Great interview with Jen Cohen. Lisa, she had a lot to say about her job, NIL, facilities, Reggie Bush. What was your big takeaway?
She's a very personable person. I enjoyed listening to her. She feels normal. Just like,
yes,
she just feels like somebody you could sit down with and have a chat about.
Lynn Swan life. Was a person that you're like, I am never going to interact with this person in real life. Like, he doesn't exist in a world in which I also do. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. And I liked like Mike Bone, but Mike Bone was also one of those like big personality people who you're never quite sure like how much of this is like real and how much of this is like
Jen Cohen just seems like a normal... in line with you at Ralph's.
Yeah.
And I mean that in the best way possible. Yes, you know what I mean?
Like, she's very
like,
real.
She seems like a real person.
Yeah.
Like she's human.
And I enjoyed her perspective on like her like the job itself and what the job entails, and she sort of described herself as a part-time like psychologist because she has to just sort of work with the coaches and sort of understand the coaching staff and make sure that she knows what they're motivated by and to help them through the sort of mental side of their job. And she's also like a construction worker because part of her job is like bulldozing the things that are in their way or like coming in like a wrecking ball and just clearing the way for them and making their jobs easier. And she's part like a legal strategist because she's got to deal with all the lawsuits that happen with the NCAA and all that kind of stuff.
She's also literally a construction worker. She has to go to all the facilities.
She's
got to
go. I mean, and that's, she talked about the facilities upgrades, which are exciting. That I didn't realize this. Maybe I've just been out of the loop, Michael. Did we have a date for when the new football facilities would be completed?
I thought I remember 2026 being the thing originally, but like I
just
didn't realize
way that, sooner than I expected.
We're a year and 11 months removed from 2026.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah. The new football facilities and sports science performance center, or whatever, is going to be finished in 2026. They've already broken ground on the new practice field that will be ready for the fall, which I thought was interesting.
Was I just not paying attention to all this kind of stuff? Like, is Dado gone?
I don't know if it's gone, but I think Dado is already like gone. Like, I think Dado is not in use.
Okay.
I think they've already...
Because I was like looking at the pictures and something like, there's no room to put the extra field there if Dado is where it is now. Because I know that Dado is sort of going to move and turn with the new Dado and whatnot. But
from what I remember, it's going to be a full-size grass field and a full-size turf field, right?
Yeah.
So, Kenny confirms it's not going to be used for baseball this season. So I think the building that's there that was next to the practice field to Howard Jones, I'm assuming that's already in the process of being taken out. But you know, the team's going to have a new practice field. So that's going to be exciting for this coming season. And that was a cool update that's coming very much more quickly than I can process. But then again, the month of January has gone more quickly than I can process, so there's that.
Right.
And then she talked about the Reggie Bush stuff, and nothing new there, but it's good to hear her say that they believe that Reggie Bush is a Heisman winner. They want to treat him as such, and tomorrow they would put his jersey and his Heisman back if they had the go-ahead for that. So, I thought it was a good interview. I thought it was worth a listen. Really gives you a sort of an insight into her perspective on some things and the Big Ten move. I thought it was one of the big takeaways I had was just a little throwaway thing about the Big Ten logistical challenge of she was sort of downplaying the travel stuff a little bit. She was sort of talking about how, you know, only 40% of USC student athletes are going to actually be playing Big Ten road schedules.
I think there's so many sports, and think about all the sports that SC has now that are not Pac-12 sports.
Yeah.
So, like, water polo doesn't exist in the Big Ten. It didn't exist in the Pac-12.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, I think that this is where, like, this is unfair to the Olympic sports, is that when people are thinking of sports, I think the ones that people are thinking about are part of that 40%. They're thinking about football and basketball.
Well, and you think about
baseball.
Football is a, like, think about
volleyball, the revenue ones.
Think about how many, if we're talking a percentage of the athletes, of the student athletes, there are 100 football players mm-hmm. that are part of that.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest.
And like, how many are on the golf
biggest,
team?
The biggest
like 10
team
maybe?
Yeah.
I just looked it up, by the way. SC Baseball is playing at LMU this year. Yeah. They have the Blue Monster wall in left field at Page Stadium. But anyways, no mean to derail you.
My parents are LMU alums.
Yeah. Let me know university.
What?
Wait.
Let me...
What does LMU stand for? Isn't it
Loyola Marymount University?
No, I know that part, but there's a thing. Like, LMU in text lingo means something, isn't it?
You're mixing up let me know and hit me up.
Yes, you're right. Yeah. Okay. All right. Ignore me. I'm a cringy millennial over here. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So my thoughts on Jen. I don't want to cut you off.
No, I'm
here,
done. I was rambling. Go for it.
But my thoughts on the Jen Cohen stuff was, I thought it was interesting. I thought she really asserted the NIL stuff. She said that, you know, we are competitive with everybody else. I thought it was, she was saying the thing that we had talked about before. Like, I know that SC fans are frustrated with the NIL stuff, but like, she sort of insinuated too that like, nobody knows what the hell's going on either. Like, She was confident in how SC was competitive there, which I think is a good thing. If that is truly the case, like that is a good thing for SC to be. But also, I think it's so new that like the opportunity, the ideals of what we think they could, like the dreams are endless. And I think that makes every, like, you go to on an Alabama board and people are not happy with what they're doing with NIL, and you go on an Oregon board and they're not happy with what they're doing at NIL. And it's like, there's no gold standard for what success is. And when that's the case, it's hard to know what how to measure it, how to measure what's good or bad, which makes it both exciting because you can take advantage of this, you know, brave new world, but also terrifying because I think you can also not know what the hell's going on. You can be behind the eight ball. And she talked about how the rules are constantly changing and not everybody's following by the rules. There's also probably a lot of people not following by the rules just out of, you know, maybe ignorance more than just malice too, just because everything is so new. It's hard to understand when, you know, she talked a little bit about the when are you going to be on what side of what as a coach too? Like, what can you do as a coach? What can you do with NIL stuff? And like, they're trying to streamline those things. They're trying to, there's be new legislation from the NCAA about that, which is going to be helpful in establishing clear lanes for where the coaches can be when it comes to recruiting and stuff, which I think is going to be helpful. But all in all, I thought Jen Cohen sounded great. Go listen to the interview over at the Parasol podcast. And it wasn't necessarily any, you know, smoking gun kind of thing or like amazing one little thing that, you know, I think it's going to catch on to be like the big newsy talking thing out point. Of it. But like all of it together, I think was, you have to feel good about where SC is in terms of leadership. Like I think SC's in a place in which the people care, and that's what you want, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I think Jen Cohen does a great job of portraying that at least, which is good, which is absolutely good. Other coaching stuff that we haven't got to talk about yet. Alex Grinch has a new job. He's going to be the Wisconsin safeties coach. And Alicia, you know what this means? Saturday, September 28th, Alex Grinch returns to the Coliseum.
Oh, he will get a response. That much I'm sure.
Will he be on the field or in the booth? I don't know. It'll be interesting. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how that goes when he and the Badgers come to the Coliseum September 28th. He gets reunited with Tackett Curtis, even though Tackett Curtis is a linebacker, not a safety. Yeah. But that's where that is. USC has hired former Oklahoma wide receiver Spence Jones as a grad assistant on offense. And USC graduate assistant for the secondary, Will Johnson, was hired away at North Dakota State. So that was he was the player to
was
be
that,
named
was
later.
Was that the player to be named later?
Yeah, the coach to be named later. Yeah.
Yeah.
In the Mad Ants deal. Other news, of course, Jim Harbaugh has left Michigan for your Chargers. He's taking defensive coordinator Jesse Minter and strength coach Ben Herbert with him. Sharon Moore, of course, named as the replacement in Ann Arbor. And, of course, SC plays Michigan the week before Wisconsin as the first ever Big Ten road game that USC has, September 21st, at the Big House.
Big game. Big early test.
Yeah.
Will be fascinating for sure.
Yeah. Other news, basketball. USC's men's basketball is...
boo-boo sauce is the word I would use. Boo-boo sauce.
They're not good. They just got jiggle-bagged by UCLA. The Bruins were on a 22-4 run before halftime. That's true snarf-whirling that they got over there.
USC has lost five games in a row by an average of 12 points.
This is it, right?
No. No, I don't think it's it, because Andy Enfield will get to cry injury, and excuses will be made, and he will be retained.
This has got to be
for another year of my pain.
I think this has got to be it.
I have been saying it for several years now, all I am saying.
You can have this year. You can have an injury bad year. If it wasn't for all the other thing, you know what I mean? Like, this isn't a one. This being this bad is a one off, but like, this isn't a one off in terms of like coaching concerns.
Does LeBron James intend to let Bronny James return to USC next season with the coaching that he has received? That is the ultimate question, because the answer should inform USC.
Let's give Bronny some agency here.
I don't know.
I understand the
I mean, this season is probably proof that the idea that he can go to the NBA draft is extremely not plausible.
Right.
But also, I would argue personally that allowing him to be coached by Andy Enfield is not a strategy to get him to the NBA either.
Sure.
But I am a hater, and everyone
big
should
hater.
Know that already.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Big shout out to Tim in the chat for a super chat. He says, here's $10 for the jiggle bag sighting.
We also got a super chat from West Texas Mike earlier.
Yeah.
With no comment, so
yeah.
Cheers.
Here, West Texas Mike, this is for you.
Good old Buc-ee's.
Buc-ee's. Yeah. I need some beaver nuggets.
We do.
We had beaver nuggets recently. A couple.
We did.
A month ago? Yeah, we had beaver nuggets a month ago. Those were absolutely okay. Side plot here before we get to the mailbag. Favorite Buc-ee's item?
I love these the glasses that we have.
That's a cop out and a half.
What other Buc-ee's items do we have? Unless we're are beaver nuggets an item?
Yeah, I'm talking about things you get at Buc-ee's.
Oh, okay, things you can buy at Buc-ee's.
Where are you on the roasted almond thing?
No, I'm a beaver nuggets person.
Yeah, me too. I've never gotten one of the brisket sandwiches. I mean, I know people love the brisket sandwiches.
That's a good point. We've never done that, and we need to try it. But
yeah, the song kind of wigs me out a little bit. So
yeah.
But beaver nuggets and a big ass drink, I'm all for it. Glenn in the chat says beef jerky. Yeah, they have a ton of that too. All right, let's get to the mailbag, shall we?
You've got mail.
All right, we got a YouTube comment from Greg. I'm more optimistic about this team than I have been since 2018. Last year, I never bought into the idea that Grinch was going to make this defense better. I would ask that if he got this defense to be top 70, is that good enough? Clearly, it was worse than last year. The defensive coaching staff has been around a success. Lynn being hired from the Ravens and knowing that the scheme has shut down Washington and the Texans and the 49ers is good. Entz winning titles at North Dakota State, Henderson winning a Super Bowl, Belk being on a national title winning team at Alabama, Nua being on a Super Bowl team. What success has Grinch or Williams or Manning or Odom been on? And it was a bad idea from the start to bring in defensive assistants from Oklahoma because they couldn't get it done over there. Also, every team except Penn State will be breaking in new quarterbacks. Hartman, Daniels, McCarthy, Tagovailoa, Penix, Moore are all gone. I'd say the best quarterback SC will face this year is Riley Leonard at Notre Dame. I think this defense is a golden opportunity to take advantage of the inexperience or lack thereof of talent at the quarterback position. He's kind of talked about a lot of these things earlier.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with the elevation of the coaching staff defensively. I agree it was a mistake to bring those guys over from Oklahoma. I understand how that mistake was made, but it was a mistake, obviously, based on the results. And the correction that has been put in front of us is about as good as you could have asked for. And the vulnerabilities of teams on USC's schedule will give USC a chance to go out there and immediately prove that this isn't a 4 to 5 year process. This is a quicker turnaround than people might expect. And I kind of, one thing I think we're going to continue to talk about as the season gets closer is I kind of like the idea of USC playing from an underdog perspective, not like a literal underdog perspective, but you know, from USC teams to me that have had to fight their way up the top 25 like rankings have always just been, for whatever reason, it just always feels like it turns out better that way. Yeah. Like I think that this team could be one of those teams that gets ranked in like early top 25s, like in the closer to 20, maybe even left out in a few and all that kind of stuff, and then, you know, win a few games, build up some momentum, and then go from there.
I need to stress the nuance of what I'm about to say because I know that nuance is lost in a lot of things that is ever said. I am with Greg in the, like Greg says that I'm the more optimistic about this year than any year since 2018. I'm not to that point. I mean, I would have been more optimistic last year, especially since you're bringing back the Heisman winner. You went out and got Dorian Singer. And we talk about the changes on defense this year. Well, they made changes on defense last year too. And so, like, yeah, I think there were reasons to, you know, go in to think that, you know, playoff and all those kind of things, right? So I don't think that going into the season that my expectations for this upcoming season are anywhere near they were a year ago. However, and this is where the nuance is, I think that this team just might be one of the most interesting teams in a long time. Like genuinely fascinating. I have no idea what to expect. You know, I talked earlier that, you know, reasonably expect 8-4 just as a very conservative, like, baseline for what things can be just for now, and then you go from there. But, like, there are, like, it's the, as much as it kills me that the college football landscape is changing and I don't like change is exciting. Like, there is so much variance right now in college football. You know, so many coaches moving all over the place, teams shifting conferences, quarterbacks moving everywhere. Like, I think it provides so much volatility that anything can happen. And then you combine that with this being a USC roster, which might have some of the most uncertainties that I've ever seen, ever. But they're like uncertainties that aren't necessarily bad. Like, the uncertainty of the quarterback situation is fascinating. Like, I don't think that USC is going to have a bad quarterback.
No.
But, like, I genuinely don't know if it's going to be Moss or Maiava. And, like, I'm really intrigued to find out what that's going to be. Mm-hmm. I'm genuinely intrigued to see what the receiving core is going to be like. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm very excited for this upcoming season because there's so many interesting storylines. And so I won't say I'm super optimistic about SC's chances this upcoming season versus everything else, but this team might be one of the most exciting teams in recent memory, strictly because of the interest level of all these different things. Like, yeah. Obviously, you wish that you were returning your Heisman-winning quarterback. You wish you were returning defense that didn't have all questions, and that would be super exciting time to live in and all that stuff. And, like, you wish that SC was, you know, still 6-0 back at the time that they were a few months ago and all those things. Obviously. But I'm just saying, like, there's so many intriguing things that, like, I am fully bought in from the narrative side of, like, from the storytelling side of, like, I want to see how this pans out. Like, this is a book I want to read. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
Like I think the defense is going to be very fascinating. Will they be great? Will it be an epic failure? I don't know. It's going to be fascinating to freaking find out. And, like, that alone has been, you know, I think encouraging, because it's, you know, coming after the end of the season where, you know, the wheels fall off and you get to that point where, like, everything becomes a slog. It's like, how are you going to rebuy in? Not only, you know, if you're a USC fan, but as a spectator, as a commenter, as a podcaster about this team, like, how are you going to rebuy in with energy talking about this team going forward? Well, you can do that when they have a situation that is so freaking fascinating. I don't know. Like, it's an exciting time because I don't know any of the answers. And no one does.
And no one does. And that's...
Yeah.
I think we'll all be guessing. Everyone is guessing what's to come. And you can sort of look at it one way or another, and you might end up being right, but it will be, if you're right about what comes this season, it won't because you had foresight. It's because the clocks just, you know, it will be 12 o'clock at some point. I'm with you. I think there's a lot to look forward to this season, a lot of mystery to be sort of revealed.
And the other thing is, Kenny says, whenever we've had high expectations, it hasn't worked out. But our most fun years had no expectations going into them. Yeah. I think that could end up being a situation like this. I don't think, there are no national title expectations going into this upcoming season.
That's why
I think there are no playoff expectations.
That's why I'm with Greg about being optimistic, because, like, it's truly a season where... being optimistic doesn't have to mean that I think USC is going to win a national title. We're going into the 2023 season.
Right.
Being optimistic would have been me saying USC can win a national title.
Mm-hmm.
And this year it's more like I'm just optimistic that the direction of the program will be positive, as opposed to like an expectation of what that positivity, where that lands USC in the end.
I think one of the most exciting things about this upcoming season is that there isn't like a strict rubric of like, Obviously, you want the team to be a national title contender going into the season, where, like, you know what the rubric is. It's win every game and get in the playoff with your Heisman Trophy quarterback. Like, that's what you live for, right? This season, I think, is going to be very exciting because that rubric isn't there. Like, the rubric is just like, are they getting better on defense? And how much so? And like that, I think, will just make the season, hopefully,
interesting. It might feel a little bit like 2022, where 2022, USC, for all intents and purposes, was playing with house money.
Sure.
In the sense that, like, it's year one, we don't know what to expect. Mm-hmm. And then USC went out and sort of exceeded expectations there, even though they didn't get somewhere in the end. But the exceeding of that expectation
Feel kind of like that.
Was fun because realistically, like, all of your expectations are not fit on this coming season. They're about what you can expect from the season after.
They're big picture expectations,
what happens in 2024 sets expectations for 2025.
Mm-hmm.
2024 sort of has a lighter load of pressure, I think, for that reason.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's go to an email we got from Tony in Denora, PA. Quick comment on Fish, Jed Fish. You know, he cried the blues last year when Dorian Singer left Arizona for SC, but it's okay when he leaves Arizona for Washington. And that really shows what a bum he is. He only met with his team for 10 minutes before bolting town. He's now on my list of teams that I hope lose every game. Wow.
You feel strongly about that, Tony. That's fine.
Yeah. I totally get the irony there that the players and the coaches leave on completely different terms and whatnot. I also would say, how is a coach supposed to leave? That would make that would work for everybody. I don't know the answer. Like the idea of like, well, you have to meet with your team, and then how much do you want to?
They
meet
don't
want to
hear from you. They also for don't want to hear 10 minutes. From you. Like,
yeah,
if the outcome is always you leaving them, they don't want to hear from you for 5 minutes.
If they have a 2-hour conversation with you, people are upset that like, why are you wasting my time talking? Like, yeah. I don't like. West Texas Mike in all caps, don't time the coach's party and speak, you'll never be. Yeah. I don't think there's any way to do it right.
This is also why, like,
how do you break up with an ex?
Breaking up, there's no good way to do it. Yes. You just
face
do
to
it.
Face.
Yes.
Is
don't
the best
do it
method,
over text.
But like,
that's the only, if you're a coach, you just don't do the breakup over text. If you're a person, you don't do the breakup over text, whatever it is.
Right.
You just stand in front of them. You take your lumps. You get it over with. And it doesn't, there is no good way to do it. That's the reality. But this is also why I think that I appreciate, for instance, Clay Helton's approach to transfers. I appreciate so far Lincoln Riley's approach to transfers, although he hasn't necessarily been presented with one that was as painful as some losing Dorian Singer. But the idea of like, the dudes are going to transfer. We wish them well.
Yeah.
No hard feelings, whatever, because you may be the one who's going to turn around. And number one, you will be turning around and taking players from other programs as well. So don't be a hypocrite.
Right.
And number two, you may be the one that has to leave. And it's just like, recognize the position that you're in, recognize the position that they're in, and empathize with other people, and don't be like Ilium in the chat says, don't be a clown like Pat Narduzzi. Like, just the reality of the game is the reality of the game, and you work within it.
Yeah, that was Narduzzi was very much
mad about Jordan Addison and
Addison and losing him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very much like lost the video game behavior kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where if it was on the other foot, he wouldn't have cared. Yeah. But like, that's how coaches are. That's not just the Pat Narduzzi thing. Like, Ilium's right that coaches are full of BS and look out for number one like anyone else. Yeah. Yeah. Right. And this is, you know, we talked about it before, but like you had made the comment recently, just don't listen to every single word that the coach says when they're talking about like, this is my dream job and blah blah blah. Like, that's all, those things are subject to change also. I don't think that necessarily coaches can be full of BS. I also don't necessarily think that coaches are lying in some instances where they're like, but you said that you would never leave 2 months ago. Well, 2 months ago, he might have actually thought he was never going to leave.
2 months ago, you told your girlfriend that you loved her.
Yes.
And now you're breaking up with her. Like, this is not just coach. Like, this is just people. People change their minds. Things change for people. People change. People prioritize things in different moments. You can be perfectly happy in the position that you're in 1 week, and then the next week you have an aha moment where you're like, no, I'm gonna move on. I'm gonna do something different, or a new opportunity comes around, or whatever it is, and you make that decision.
Alicia, I'm just gonna say it right here. I'm not gonna leave you or this podcast ever.
Well, we're gonna hold you
as
to
it
that,
stands
Michael.
Right now. As it stands right now,
we're gonna hold
if
you.
If Kate
to that.
Winslet comes tomorrow and says, "Do you want to start a Chelsea podcast?"
And you know what?
It might change.
To be totally honest, if Kate Winslet knocked on our door and said, "Michael Castillo, run away with me," and you did, would I be hurt? Yes. Would I not want to have an hour long conversation with you where you say, no, I'm leaving for Kate Winslet, sorry, where the outcome is you leaving for Kate Winslet?
It might end up being just a text.
I might not want that to happen, but also
it might just be a text.
The next day after I sort of sat down and took a deep breath and thought about it, I would go, yeah, if Kate Winslet had knocked on the door and said, Alicia, run away with me, I probably would have said yes. So, you know, it's, It's true.
It's Kate Winslet. It's Kate Winslet. Chelsea pod. Like, I'm sorry. I don't even know if she supports Chelsea. I don't know who she supports. Doesn't matter to me.
Yeah.
It's Kate. Oh, okay. All right. Let's go back to YouTube comments. Okay. Sagar says, what comes to mind when someone says that they are still writing checks, writing 2023 on personal check? Okay. So I misread this when I first, you know, the little inside baseball. We have a little virtual studio where we can sort of star comments and then come back to them here in later on. And when I first started this, I just was reading this really quickly. I thought the question was what comes to mind when people are writing checks still in 2023? And I was ready to reach over here and grab the checkbook and say, we are, because our apartment building still takes checks. But what comes to mind when someone says they're still writing 2023 on personal checks? That sounds like something I would do. To be honest, because when do I write the year? Like, it is weird to think about what year it is.
Yes.
I remember being a kid and like the first time I had to write 2000 on a in the corner of the paper, this is 99 and not 98 now. Like, that was
okay. This is me admitting something. I have what I call a postmortem. For my job, that is something I've started for the new year, sort of a new year resolution, where every day at the end of my shift, I have a spreadsheet where I sort of have some check boxes for things that I want to have done every day. And I sort of give it a color coding, like, was this a good day? Was this a not so good day? Like, write my notes about like just how I felt about my shift or whatever. And I am just now realizing that I have written 1/13/23, 1/19/23, 1/28/23.
So
every single date on here is 23.
I had this problem in elementary school because
I always had this problem in elementary school
because I was on it was an all around we were year round, and my track I was track A. Track A was sort of like the most realistic to normal tracks, but to normal schedules, but not really. So like we would have summers off. So the school years technically started July 1st or whatever, right? But we didn't start until the middle of August, which is more normal-ish, right? But yet we would be off at the end of the winter. And so it would, then, so basically our Christmas break wouldn't end until the middle to end of February. So like that's how long the winter break would be, which means that I wouldn't be writing the date.
You wouldn't get into the habit of it
until almost 2 months into the new year, which means I never had that experience in January of being like the first month, the first week back, and like getting used to writing the name wrong or the date wrong. So it was super prevalent because it would take forever because I was behind the eight ball. But that was just elementary school.
Well, I was behind the eight ball. I mean, I was not behind the eight ball, and I still would always mess up. And obviously I'm still doing that now, and I'm now fixing this. So
yeah.
Yikes.
It's 2024, which when I write the check for the rent in a couple of days, I will make sure that I put 2024. Lamont says, do you know if they are still keeping Taylor Mays on staff, any kind of role? I believe it's important to show, get access to the team of what it really means to be a Trojan.
There have been no indications that he's not on staff. We talked a little bit about the staffer that USC did lose. I feel like we would hear if Taylor Mays was leaving. It's getting close enough to the approach of camp that I'm sort of assuming that he's going to stay. I'm just making that assumption, but I don't know that we can know that until we get the spring primer. When we get the spring primer, that will definitely confirm that.
The other thing I was going to mention is that I don't remember to see if this even got out there, but there was the... I don't remember what it was called, but there was some sort of award for coaches that are non
non-on-field?
Yes. And one of the, it was support staff coaches or something like that. And it was like one of the, it was Ryan Doherty was one of the finalists for, like analyst of the year or whatever. He's the guy who basically is USC's special teams coordinator, even though he's he's not really SC special teams coordinator because SC doesn't have a special teams coordinator. He's the analyst who is assigned with that special job teams. Essentially.
Yeah,
he was named for the national job and the national award, which I thought was hilarious because SC fans have a full diaper over the special team stuff, and yet here he was in
that's. Purely
potentially
because
getting the award,
that's
but like
purely because Zachariah Branch returns.
Zachariah Branch
kicks.
Exists. Yes.
Yeah.
So it's always funny that those things are sort of like that. So, all right. Last comments here. You guys are running rampant in the chat about Kate Winslet, West Texas Mike. If Michael and Kate Winslet run off together, would Michael and Alicia still do Reign of Troy together? Or would Kate Winslet be here for us to rip Annie Enfield with the same fervor? No, it's me leaving. I am leaving SC Podcasting altogether to become a Chelsea pod. I'm moving to England. I'm, leaving everything. It'll be a Reign of Blue. Me and Kate. Yeah, and hopefully she leaves a spot for me on the door.
I mean, yeah.
Hopefully.
I would just have to find a new co-host. I don't know.
Oh? That's news to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you're running off to do a Chelsea podcast with Kate Winslet, then I get to
no,
run
you're supposed
off
to
and
just
do...
sit here and suffer and be sad. Ilium 55 says Kate Winslet is now the official Rot Hall pass. I mean, was there any doubt? Funny on MC. So, Alicia, who would you run off with?
I'm trying to think.
Because Ilium 55, if Malapai and Winslet got together and went to Chiefs games, would Michael hate them?
Yes.
Unfortunately,
I was trying to think of like a Kate Winslet like equivalent, like an actor or something like that. And I'm not currently enamored with any actors. No. I mean, if Virgil van Dyke showed up at our front door, I would go hang out with Virgil van Dyke. So
I thought you were more of a Xabi Alonso guy. Girl.
Okay, so you brought it up. If Xabi Alonso came to my front door. See ya.
Did you tell him his name sucks?
No, I love it.
Xabi.
Okay, so this is apparently a De Artola thing and our spouse's thing because my brother, who's also a Liverpool fan, has always wanted to name his firstborn child Xabi, and his fiance was like, absolutely not. So... Ilium in the chat says Legolas from Lord of the Rings. Trust me, Orlando Bloom has been very, very, very high on the list of Alicia Hall Pass people for
really?
A long time.
Orlando
Bloom, specifically the Orlando Bloom that existed on the posters for Pirates of the Caribbean. Yeah.
Did you have that poster?
No.
Was that your version of like the...
That wasn't
the Farrah Fawcett poster.
No, that wasn't the Farrah Fawcett poster. But if I had to pick, like that would be high up there.
Oh. All right.
Yeah.
All right. That'll do. I'm getting a text from Kate, so we're gonna have to call this one. So, we will be back next week to talk more USC football. Potentially next week we might have a change of schedule, just because it's Super Bowl week. And we've talked about it before. We share a virtual studio with Chiefs podcast, so we might have to move things around time wise. So we'll have to figure that out. But either way, we'll be back next week. So keep your eyes peeled over on the YouTube for when the live is. Perfect time to make sure you're subscribed. Hit the bell so you get notifications of when our live shows are and all those things. So we will be back next week. We'll be ready to you know, be downloaded wherever your app is that you listen to us and all of that. Email address, randoftroy@fansite.com. Phone number, 818-643-7227. Until then, we will see ya. And by the way, keep the blue flag flying high.
Up the reds.
No, it's